This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio.
Joseph Stiglitz is a Nobel Prize-winning economist, a professor at Columbia University, a former senior vice president chief economist at the World Bank, and is a former member and chairman of the U.S. President's Council of Economic Advisors. His new book is called The Euro, How a Common Currency Threatens the Future of Europe. Dr. Stiglitz, thank you for joining us.
Nice to be here.
You are deeply worried about Europe. You think the euro might have to go if Europe doesn't fix some big things. Tell me about the underlying, confounding, drive-a-person-crazy mistake that you think is wrecking the economy in Europe.
The single mistake they made was the creation of the euro, the single currency, without creating at the same time the institutions, the frameworks that would make it work.
So they're missing the political side of this even now in 2016.
That's right. United States has 50 states, quite different. And we manage with a single currency, but we have lots of institutions. For instance, we have a national banking system, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. When a bank goes bankrupt, it's not the state like Washington that had to bail out Washington Mutual. It was all of us, the nation as a whole. And in Europe, they haven't done that.
That's right. The FDIC pays the same amount if a bank fails in Nevada as it does in California. But that is not really the way the system works in Europe.
That's right. Nevada could not have bailed out a big bank that failed there or Washington Mutual. But in Europe, the countries are expected to bail out their own banks. So there are lots of problems in the Greek banks, lots of problems in Spanish banks, and they each have to bail out their own banks. And there's a vicious circle here. When the bank goes bankrupt, the government has to pay. That weakens the government. That means nobody has confidence in the government and the ability of the government to bail out the banks. That means money runs out of the country, weakening not only the banking system, but the country as a whole. They try to create in Europe a system that they call convergence, bringing them closer together, recognizing that the countries had to be similar enough if they were a single currency was going to work. And one of the main points of my book is that unknowingly they created this diverging system so that if Spain has a problem, it gets weaker and weaker and weaker, similarly for Greece, and the money flows to Germany, getting stronger and stronger.
And we need to remind our listeners of an essential point about a common currency. It takes away the ability of an individual country to suddenly lower interest rates in the face of a crisis. Greece couldn't do that on its own because it had that euro.
Moreover, it couldn't lower its exchange rate. And lowering its exchange rate and interest rates together help stimulate the economy. So the result of this is Greece is in depression. In fact, the crisis countries in Europe, Greece, Spain, Portugal, have had a downturn greater than the Great Depression. The decline in GDP in Greece is more than 25%. The unemployment rate is more than 25%. And the youth unemployment rate is more than 60%. This is a disaster. And that 60% youth unemployment is after some of the most talented people have left for UK, for other countries. So it's hollowing out the country, ensuring that its future is bleak.
Now, you've thought a lot about the following related question. How is it that this grand project, European integration, was supposed to raise the well-being of Europeans, keep European disputes from flaring into open conflicts as well, but how is it that so many Europeans are still not seeing the benefits?
Well, you're precisely correct that it was intended to bring prosperity, and the performance, especially since 2008, has been an absolute disaster. It actually even affects the United States because we get affected if their growth is so weak, they buy fewer of our goods. I think the underlying problem is that they had a particular, I'll say, ideology, a set of beliefs about what makes markets work. They believed in what I call market fundamentalism, neoliberalism, that markets on their own work well.
You and I have been through a lot covering and helping to explain the messes when they don't.
Exactly. In 2008 was the perfect demonstration that they don't. So they never conceived of a downturn of that magnitude, never thought through what they would have to do if there were a downturn in that magnitude. And we're still, Germany, which is the dominant power, has an economic philosophy that's been rejected in most countries around the world. They believe that the way to prosperity is austerity. That is, you cut back spending, you tighten everything, and the result of that is confidence will be restored and the economy will grow. Well, we've seen the evidence in country after country, not only in Europe, but around the world. Austerity never works. And what has happened in Europe is another demonstration. For economists, this is exciting. We have more data to show that austerity doesn't work. But the people in Europe are really, really suffering.
Now, this book argues very strongly for, please, Europe, do the other part. Build the political structures that you need to support the euro. But if Europe doesn't, they're going to have to bail out of the euro?
I'm afraid so. What I say is required is not a lot. But it seems to be more than the politics in Europe will allow. They will have to bail out. In the book, I trace out two alternative ways that they could do with minimal disruption. One I call an amicable divorce.
An extrication plan that would play out in some sort of phase so that the disruption to people and markets would be minimized.
Precisely. And the other idea that I put forward is, you might say, what I call a flexible euro, which really is a multiple system. Northern Europe might have one euro, Southern Europe another euro. And then I describe how you could set up a framework between this Northern and Southern euro that would, again, have minimal disruption. And then over time, if the two or three or four parts of Europe could get enough solidarity, enough social and political cohesion, I describe a way that those different euros could be brought together as a single currency. So one of the points I make is you have to be very careful in your pacing, and I describe a way in which you could move from the current situation where the euro is clearly not working to a situation where it would.
Now, the book is focused clearly on Europe, but there are lessons implicit for the U.S. and beyond about economic policies that leave big parts of the population behind. And so you must see echoes of some of your work and thinking about Europe playing out in the U.S. presidential election.
Oh, very much so. That what happened in Brexit was a large group of people said, our economic system, globalization, was not working for them. And the same thing is true in the United States. In fact, the number that I like to quote that sort of summarizes what's happened is that the median income, that is an income half above and half below, of a full-time male worker in the United States is lower than it was 42 years ago. That means stagnation for this large, important group of our country for a couple generations. There are many forces. Technology, changes in technology also play an important role.
Yes, robots ate my job principle.
They can't do anything about that, but they can do something, or at least they feel they can do something about globalization. It was a problem, though, not with globalization, but how it was managed.
And it was managed, if you look at the evidence in the fullness of time, not in the interests of the wider labor force.
Precisely. It was managed in the interest of corporate interests. Many of them did very, very well. And that concern echoes on both sides of the Atlantic. It was managed in ways that was, you might say, informed, structured by this belief that markets work perfectly. And when they work, everybody benefits. But we've seen that markets don't work perfectly, and that even if they were working for some, they're not working for large fractions of our society.
Whichever candidate becomes president, the intention is to make changes to economic policy. Dr. Stieglitz, where would you start? Would you start with fixing bridges and water systems and energy-efficient upgrades, infrastructure?
I would begin with the end of the austerity. People don't understand that in the United States. We've had austerity, milder than Europe, but we still have austerity. There are about 500,000 fewer public sector jobs than there were before the crisis. Normal expansion would have us had about 2 million more public sector jobs. Part of that, an important part, I would put into infrastructure that would stimulate the economy. Another important part, though, I would invest in technology to improve, to address the problems of our environment and to increase the productivity of American workers. I would also address the problem of our trade agreements.
Oh, so you still do see a problem with the trade agreements?
This is another example where globalization has outpaced political integration, just like in the euro. The kinds of changes, of course, that Trump has suggested, I think, are absolutely wrong. It is not a question of building walls between the United States and Mexico or other countries. It's trying to get the rules of the game right. The problem is not between us and other countries. The problem is within us, that the rules have been set largely by the United States and largely for our corporate interest rather than the interest of our country as a whole.
I mean, you can imagine the U.S. trade rep being involved in this, but what I'm really hearing you saying is this might be a campaign finance reform issue and a lobbying reform issue if you're going to change how we approach our negotiations on trade.
Very much so. In fact, in some administrations, the head of the campaign becomes U.S. trade representative, making it very clear the link between raising money and trade policy. So in my mind, you know, that not that the particular individual did anything wrong, but it, the optics are very clear that our trade policy is shaped to a very large extent by corporate interests. When we look at the investment agreement portion of the NAFTA, of the TPP, what we realize is that it's designed to restrict the ability of governments to protect our environment, to protect our health, protect our economy, to protect even worker safety and worker rights. So the real intent of a lot of this is actually to weaken the protections of consumers and workers in our society. That ought to change. We need to have a trade system that is really aimed at benefiting all segments of our society, not just the corporate interest.
Nobel laureate and Columbia professor Joseph Stieglitz was chair of President Bill Clinton's Council of Economic Advisors. The new book is called The Euro, How a Common Currency Threatens the Future of Europe. Dr. Stieglitz, thank you.
Nice to be here.